the edge of our hope, at the end of our time. We have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other. Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
The strength of this starship lay in its diversity.
You see, our glorious diversity, that is not a threat to who we are. It makes us who we are.
You don't just let things happen. You make a stand. You say no. You have the guts to do what's right when everyone else just runs away.
But we must fight this darkness that is threatening to engulf us. Each of us must be a ray of hope.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanti Show. I'm Becca, and today on Signal Boost, we have Michelle Kahn, an independent filmmaker slash videographer and writer based in New Zealand, author of No More Heroes, a novel of action, mystery, and vigilantes. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Kia ora.
All right, so why don't we start off with you telling us a little bit about No More Heroes?
All right, cool. So No More Heroes is a sort of young adult-ish action and adventure novel about young would-be vigilantes who find out that their community is much wider spread than they thought it was initially. And they find that there's hidden dangers amongst this comes with having cool superpowers or sort of superpowers. I call them abilities in the book. There's danger, there's mystery, there's music, action, fights, parkour, all the cool things, all in one.
That sounds awesome. What inspired you to sort of write this story?
Let's see. So the very first inspiration I had was way, way back. There was a friend of mine, Saf, who's also quite a prominent podcaster and writer. She had this one NaNoWriMo that she wrote ages back about all our friends as superheroes. It was sort of self-inserty, sort of wild action-y adventure type thing. And I sort of wrote a fan fiction of that, and I thought that was really fun. And then I decided maybe I'll try NaNoWriMo myself the next year. I sort of spent about a month planning it out in 2014, I think it was. And then I sort of slammed it out just for fun. And then I looked back at it and I thought, you know, this is sort of worth publishing maybe. And I sort of thrown all the inspirations of all the things that I liked in there, just like the music, electronic music specifically. I do parkour myself, so I do some parkour in there, and I love action movies and martial arts, so I threw some of that in there. And I haven't read a lot of sort of young adult sort of focus stories that don't have this big focus on romance. I was never really into that, so I thought I would do more of a focus on friendships when I was writing No More Heroes.
Yeah, you said something about the parkour community, and I saw your production company called Fish and Swallow?
Yes, that's correct.
So, like, what inspired you to bring parkour into this?
So I've been sort of a part of the New Zealand parkour community for quite some time now. I can't remember exactly when it began. I sort of started training more seriously around this time of my life when my depression and anxiety were getting pretty bad, and it sort of helped me find ways of coping with that on a day-to-day basis. Things like taking things one step at a time, small steps lead up to bigger steps. Progression is a really big part of parkour, and so just like learning little things and how that, seeing how that adds up to becoming a bigger goal that you can accomplish. And there's a lot of philosophical aspects to parkour that sort of, well, they're sort of drawn from Chinese traditional philosophies as well, which is pretty cool. And that helped me ground myself around a time when things were kind of difficult for me. So I really love parkour, and not just for the whole flashy physical aspect of it, but what it can do for one in a more holistic manner. And so when I was writing No More Heroes, because it was such a big part of my life at that time, I thought specifically having some parkour-centric heroes. There are a couple of vigilantes in No More Heroes that focus heavily on parkour as part of their discipline. They're part of their training discipline, part of their fighting style and so on. I thought it'd be cool to sort of inject some of those philosophies and thoughts into there, because parkour is often, people always see the outside of it, the really flashy part where people are doing flips and big jumps and big vaults and all that. But I wanted to sort of portray it from a loosely, I guess you could call it an own voices perspective from someone who practices it. Yeah, so I thought having that insider aspect of it within No More Heroes would be a good chance to share how the way I see parkour with the world as well. I also made a parkour documentary. Move is a parkour documentary about the parkour community here in New Zealand and the philosophies and principles from parkour and how they've helped the practitioners within the community, like, shape their lives or help them through difficult times. It took me a couple years to make. It's about 75 minutes long. So much for that test 20-minute documentary thing that I was going to make initially. No, of course, there's me blowing things wildly out of proportion again. But yeah, it's one of the biggest things I've ever made, along with No More Heroes, and it's one of the things, the creative things that I'm most proud of as well.
I noticed that you advertised this book as own voices. Like, what made this story so important for you to tell, especially how it relates to your own experiences with parkour and anxiety and all of that?
Yeah, right. So I actually, when I initially wrote it, I hadn't been exposed to the book community on Twitter, so I didn't know that own voices was a thing that existed around that time. But what I wanted to do was put in a character that sort of reflected me in a way, because around that time I was more aware of, especially in visual media, the importance of having characters that look like me or like have the same heritage as me. I'm 1.5-gen Cantonese Chinese New Zealander. So I had the character of Fang, aka Resonance, who is also Cantonese Chinese, and like me, she has anxiety. The anxiety part actually came at, it was sort of unexpected in a way. I hadn't initially intended for her to have anxiety, but one day during NaNoWriMo, I was having a bad day and I couldn't think of what to write and I was having a bit of anxiety, so I sort of started riffing on that, and then it ended up being a part of her character, so I sort of went back and wove that more into her character. So there's Fang, who has anxiety and who does parkour and is Cantonese Chinese, and those are own voices aspects for me, and I guess the intersectionality aspect of that is important as well. There's so often this thing where you have token characters who are just one thing or the other. They're either a person of color or they have a mental illness, but it's never both at the same time. So I thought having both of that in the same time, because I have both of those at the same time, I am both of those at the same time, was like something worth putting in, something exciting.
Yeah, definitely. So you mentioned NaNo. So you started writing this during NaNo?
Yeah, that was the very first NaNo I ever did. It was quite fun, actually. I thought, you know, I'll just do it for fun, see if I can hit the 50K. I think within the first 2 weeks, I had gotten about the halfway point, and then I hit 60K by the time I finished. And I think by the time I did the rewrites, it was nearly 70K.
That's awesome.
It's typical me. I always write way too much for essays at uni, and then Look at what I've done.
So do you have any tips for other writers who are trying to do their own NaNo and trying to get through that whole 50K in 1 month?
I think having pre-prepared a lot of stuff beforehand really, really helps a lot. I spend, like, the 2 times that I've done NaNo now, I've spent the entirety of October planning out everything that I want to accomplish with the NaNo. I plan out my characters and sort of loosely how they are going to end up, what they want to achieve. I sort of go through chapter by chapter. Well, I make an outline, flesh it out a little bit, and then break it up into chapters, and that makes things easily more, well, it appears like it's less work because it's like, oh, this chapter's only going to be, like, I don't know, 2K instead of looking at the 50K. But yeah, it's again with that progression thing of parkour. The little things add up to big things. So yeah, splitting up that work into the chapters. I like working with chapters. I mean, might not be the same with everyone, but putting that into bite-sized chunks makes it seem like it's easily accomplishable. And I mean, if ideas come during the process, then adapt to that and change with that, because those can be some of the best ideas you'll ever have. One of the best plot twists I came up with in No More Heroes came as I was writing the exact point in that chapter. So I mean, go with it, but you know, have some, so I'm sort of a planner and a pantser at the same time. I don't know, I mean, I'm always in between things. Like, I'm in between shoe sizes, in between clothes sizes, in between cultures and languages and genders and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yep.
What year did you do NaNo for this?
2014, yep. And I went and did it in 2015 as well, starting the draft for book 2. But yeah, that's still a work in progress, so.
Oh, yeah. What else are you working on right now?
Yep, so there's book two of No More Heroes on the way. I am fleshing out a lot more aspects of characters that were written in the first No More Heroes, because, like, on looking, like, it's still something I'm really proud of, but I look back and think, you know, there's some stuff that I could have improved on. So I'm working on that and putting that into the second book. So I think it'll be a lot bigger as a result. Yeah. And I'm also sort of coming up with ideas for other stories that I want to write after I finish with the No More Heroes saga, which will be probably three books and a couple of ants, maybe a novella. So after No More Heroes, there will be a magical heist novel, which I can't even remember how I came up with that idea anymore, but it's in my notebook, so it exists now. And there's also a story that I'm sort of putting down ideas for at the moment, which is about a fox spirit and a woodcutter in ancient China. It's some indeterminate time period going on a quest together to save an ancient bamboo forest from destruction. It's going to be so magical.
How do you think your kind of career as an independent filmmaker has affected how you write?
I have always been an incredibly visual person, and I think the amount of action media that I ingest really had an impact on the way that I approach writing, especially the action scenes in No More Heroes. I sort of approach it as sort of as if I was writing a treatment for a script, but not exactly the same, because scripts are like, you're not meant to write prose in a script. I have trouble with this all the time. My film teachers are always like, oh, you put too much prose in the script again. But yeah, being able to compartmentalize the action into visually easily digestible, and you can see it in your head. Yeah. Being able to visualize that all in my head and putting a sort of script-y spin on it is something like the script writing things that I learned from film studies helped a lot with the way that I approach writing action specifically. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So why don't you let us and our listeners know where they can find you and No More Heroes?
All right, so you can find No More Heroes on my website, nomoreheroesnovel.com, or on Amazon or Gumroad. And I've also got a Facebook page for No More Heroes, so that's facebook.com/nomoreheroesnovel. You can find me on Twitter at FSWrites. And I've also got my film stuff on fishandswallowproductions.com or facebook.com/fishandswallow.
Thank you so much for joining us, Michelle.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us on Signal Boost. Go check out Michelle and No More Heroes.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanti Show. I'm Jen, and today on Signal Boost we have Rachel Cordasco, founder, writer, and curator of the Speculative Fiction in Translation blog. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thank you for having me.
First things first, as always, tell us about yourself and your work.
Well, currently my day job is a developmental editor at the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. And when I have time at night after the crazy kids are in bed, I run sfintranslation.com, which is a site for everything speculative fiction in translation. So fantasy, science fiction, magical realism, horror, all of that. And any news, any stories available online, new novels coming out, I post everything there. I write reviews of any SF and translation that I'm reading at the time. And I've also been translating Italian SF and sending that to SF magazines. Gotten a couple published, so that's been good. And I contribute reviews to places like World Literature Today, Strange Horizons, and I also write for Book Riot. This is how I keep my sanity. SF in translation helps me keep my sanity.
So recently you posted the SF in Translation 2017 stats, which was really cool to see. I believe it was 23 different countries, 16 languages, which is super awesome. But I'm wondering what are kind of the areas where there seem to be really big gaps in speculative fiction in translation? And what do you think are some of the things that readers can do to help change that?
Well, so I guess for the first question, the gaps, I guess the thing that I found when I started looking into this area of the genre was what is out there. I mean, all I did was just kind of scratch the internet figuratively. And next thing I knew, it was just a ton of stuff that I found. And I couldn't believe there was so much out there. I had never heard of any of it. And that was kind of scary because, you know, my life has been books. You know, from the time that I was able to read. And so I did graduate work in American literature, but science fiction is really not accepted in the academy, really. So I just really never like read a ton of it. And then when I started reading more of it only a few years ago, I saw how much there was. And there's kind of the two sides of this. There's so much out there and you can find it all because of the blessed internet. I mean, it is a wonderful thing. Without the internet, we wouldn't know really about a lot of these books and stories. But on the other hand, if you're not looking for it, you're just not going to find it. There's so much out there that if you look for it, if you type in Japanese horror or Czech science fiction or something, you'll find things. But if you don't do it, and I think that's part of the problem with publishing in general is in the United States is that there is so much that is originally written in English, that's science fiction, fantasy, horror, that there is no real mechanism for telling people about it. On Twitter, I'll post pictures sometimes if I walk into like a Barnes & Noble. I'll go into the sci-fi section and I'll find, you know, the three body problem or the graveyard apartment or something like that. And I'll say, oh my God, and I'll take a picture and I'll post it like, look what I found in the wild, because it's rare that you'll see SF in translation in a place like Barnes and Noble. You're not going to find much of it any other place. It's there if you're looking for it, but if you're not looking for it, you're not going to know about it. So that's why I started SF in translation and why I try to tell more people about it. Like, you like this kind of sci-fi, or you like this kind of fantasy. You know, why don't you try Finnish Weird? That's out. That's available. Very little, but some science fiction in English coming out of Israel, more coming out of Italy, some coming out of Egypt and Iraq. There's so much. And so I'm trying to boost it and help other people do that. There was a World SF blog run by Levi Tidar, and that ran for a few years. And that's a wonderful resource and still up online for people to read. But I kind of see my site as kind of continuing his work of bringing more international SF to America, because you know, we like reading good stuff, you know. There's good stuff outside of this country, you know. It's not just in English, it's everywhere.
So what are some of the barriers then? Because as amazing as the internet is, it seems that we still don't see a great deal from, say, the African continent. We see some from North Africa and some from South Africa, but the rest of the continent is much more difficult to find. And not, I'm sure, because it's not being written, but because it's not getting translated potentially and definitely not making it to American markets. So how do we go about finding and promoting the works from places that currently are not getting well represented?
That's a really good question. The thing that I found about speculative fiction coming out of Africa is that a lot of it is actually written in English. Jeff Ryman has been publishing, I think it's on Strange Horizons now, an ongoing series called 100 African Writers. And he goes country by country where he spotlights African writers writing speculative fiction. And a lot of it really is written in English. The same with India. There's a lot of great stuff coming out. India also originally written in English for various colonial reasons. And so I have focused, because it's in English, like I really have tried to focus my attention on things that have been actively translated from another language. That I think may be kind of an area that does kind of fall through the cracks, because international science fiction is bigger than SF in translation. So there's SF written in a number of countries, but because it's in English, I don't focus on it. And also because it's in English and it's not being promoted in the United States, it's not getting, you know, the traction that it needs. And this is a really good opportunity for somebody else to maybe focus on, you know, science fiction from underrepresented countries. Now, I know that there is a site focusing on Caribbean SF, but a lot of it is also written in English. Some of it is translated, but it's a big, literally just from the time that I do have each day, it's enough to keep me busy trying to track down any SF in translation. I wouldn't even have the time to do more than that. You know, that's how much is out there. There really is a lot. But I definitely encourage people to read Jeff Ryman's posts about African writers, because they're great. They're really extensive and they really spotlight some people you wouldn't otherwise know. But, you know, I think you just need people who are promoting it, especially coming from those countries. You know, you've got people in Iraq promoting Iraqi writers, and people in Egypt, and some of these people are actually promoted by their translators, and some people can speak English enough to promote themselves through various media. So yeah, it's a lot about just kind of finding the right to be heard. I'm always looking for SF from that you don't normally, there is so much from Japan and France and Spain. So when I see SF coming out of, you know, Algeria or, you know, Lithuania or, you know, or something like that, it's pretty exciting. And a lot of times it's because of translators who are bringing those to our attention.
So what do you personally look for in a good translation?
Well, I think this speaks to this perception, I think, on the part of publishers that Americans don't like reading translations. This is just a thing I've heard. That's why a good example, okay, is Thomas Oldehoivelt. He's a Dutch author, and he wrote Hex, which apparently Stephen King it scared him so much. He like hid under the bed. I don't know. It was really scary. So you would never know that it's translated because it doesn't say it on the cover. So you have to kind of like hunt for it. And it's like translated by C. Forrest Flyer. But you're not going to see that unless you look, you know, on the copyright or whatever. And so it's, you know, or it's on the front cover, but it's real tiny to discourage anyone from being like, oh, it's translated, I'm not going to read it. Now, I don't know anyone who would be like, oh, it's translated, I don't know. A good translation is a translation that reads just perfectly smoothly in the language it's been translated into. So Legend of the Galactic Heroes is a 10 novel series, and it's currently being translated, published by Haikasoru. And, you know, you read it and you don't know, like if no one told you that it's a translation, you wouldn't know. You just say, this reads great. It's just great prose. It's currently being translated. The first three are translated by Daniel Huddleston, and the next two have been translated by Tyron Grillo. They both have different styles, and yet they all read very well. So I guess, you know, the goal is always to, just produce, you know, a beautiful product. You don't want to be reading it going, wait, what? Like that doesn't really sound right. You know, it needs to sound like English, you know, like English spoken by someone who speaks English well. But hiding the fact that it's translated, I just think it does a disservice, and I think it's not necessary. And I think it actually may encourage people. I mean, I look for translations. Like I actually want that. I mean, I'm kind of bored with just, you know, okay. You know, I mean, I haven't read anything originally written in English for like a couple of years, except for like here and there. I mean, everything I've been reading has been translations. And the thing about translations is it's doubly vetted. So it was published in one country already, and then it's published in translation in America or the UK or Australia, and it went through that vetting process too. So you know that it's going to be, you know, 99% quality. This has been vetted by so many people that, yeah, you can be sure it's good stuff. So
before we close out, what was your favorite translated work from 2017?
I am going to say The Invented Part by Rodrigo Frazan. He's originally from Argentina, writes in Spanish. He's a genius. I've like taken to social media to declare that he himself is an international treasure. His books are just filled with like ecstatic, profound thoughts that you just want to underline every single line. It's not classic what you would think of as like science fiction or speculative fiction. It has some elements of it, but his writing itself is very speculative. Like, what really is reality? You know, so meta. It's like, how can I make reality? It's actually about a writer who tries to merge with the God particle at CERN so that he can then become the writer of reality, i.e. God. You know, yeah, I know. And this guy is outrageous, this Rodrigo Frazan. And when you read him, you just want to like cry that you haven't read him before. I can't say enough about him. That's got to be my favorite this year. I also really enjoyed Orbital Cloud by Taiyo Fuji. He's had another book out, Gene Mapper, I think a couple years ago, but Orbital Cloud is very detailed, mathematical, but not like, I mean, me, I see math and I run the other way, but I found this really fascinating about space tethers, knocking out satellites and causing like global chaos and like Iranian scientists and North Korea. I'm telling you, it's great. That's much more classic kind of sci-fi.
Those both sound absolutely delicious, and I can't wait to check them out. So let's wrap this up. Tell us where we can find you and your work.
You can always go to sfintranslation.com. I keep it updated with reviews and news and highlights. There's original fiction there. You can also find me on Twitter at rcordath. R-C-O-R-D-A-F. Speculative Fiction in Translation is also on Facebook. And I welcome any and all suggestions for things that are coming out, new stories. You know, I rely a lot on people to, translators and editors and other people to tell me what, you know, what's coming out, what's happening. So you can always email me at rachel@sfintranslation.com. So I'm happy to talk about it. Love it, as you can tell.
The best kind of passion. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Rachel. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
My pleasure. So make sure, everybody, that you go check out Rachel and SF in Translation.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show, and on Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Our intro and outro music comes from The Launch by Chronux. You can find out more about their music at freemusicarchive.org.